Here we go. Action. Welcome, everybody. This is BMPBK episode 178. It is 12th of September. Autumn is arriving on the Northern Hemisphere. Summer is arriving in the Southern Hemisphere. Summer is arriving in the Southern Hemisphere. So I have to call this out. Darren Webster had a good videos on YouTube, as not in Twitter, actually, related on summer arriving and going and battle boarding. And I was a bit jealous, but it's okay. Now,
You had your chance. Now you have to wait. Yeah.
True. 6 months. Anyway, welcome to BMP Weekly. Into BMP Weekly, I always talk about the latest on the Microsoft 365, what's happening from a Microsoft provided news perspective, and also from the community blog post and all of that. We'll follow up on the Twitter and social media what's happening and collect some of the articles to call them out. Please use hashtag BMP Weekly to within the Twitter, so we'll know the awesomeness what you're writing. My name is Esa Juvonen. I'm a product manager. Yes.
Who am I anyway today?
Exactly. Let's see. Who am I today? In the Microsoft 365 platform areas, and with me as a co-host is Waldek.
Hi, everybody. My name is Waldek Mostegas, and I am Cloud Developer Advocate at Microsoft.
Excellent. And today we'll have a visitor from UK who actually visited Netherlands last weekend, unless I'm completely mistaken. We'll talk about that one during the discussion as well. But Paul Hunt is joining us on the discussion. He's a multi-year MVP, been a while around on the areas for a long, long, long time, and good person to talk with. Like, nobody would not be. Why?
Anyways, on that bombshell, without further ado, let's jump to the interview with Paul.
Sounds good. Welcome, Paul, on joining on the PMP Weekly episode 178. Good to have you in the show. Let's start by a simple things. Who are you? What do you do for a living?
Okay, so I'm Paul Hunt. I currently work for a gold partner in the UK, but I'm making some changes to my lifestyle. So I've decided to go full time. So I'm leaving the consultancy business. And I'm joining a client as an associate director very soon. So I'm kind of winding down this week.
So you're basically moving from a partner delivery-centric organization to customer side. So that's actually really...
Now you will be on the other side. Now the partners will be coming to you and you're like, ha, tell me something I don't know already.
It's quite interesting. I've been working with this client for quite some time as a partner resource. And, I got the opportunity to join them. And it was a hard decision to make, I'll be honest, to step away from consultancy. But, I mean, you guys know, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, is I had some major life changes in the last couple of years. And it got me thinking about where I'm going, what I'm doing, the time I'm spending traveling, things like that. So the opportunity came up and it was too good to be true.
That's actually really, really cool. Now, before we go to those life-changing, situations within the past years, we're friends in Facebook and we've known each other for many years. So I'm well aware of following up on the situation on that. Before, let's leave that as a teaser, as a cliffhanger. But can you talk a bit about your career? How did you end up doing a partner? And then we'll go back on the future and the situation. So how did you decide to be a consultant for Microsoft 365?
Consultant now. So I worked for a big company in the UK called Capita many years ago. So this was back around, I started with them just before the millennium. And around 2006, we were doing some project management work and we had these horrible processes where, I kid you not, we had a spreadsheet with about 11 pages. And to get a piece of work done, you had to take that spreadsheet to 11 different people. And then I was playing with a wonderful bit of software at the time called SharePoint 2007 in public beta.
I thought InfoPath. I thought InfoPath.
Right. And it was InfoPath was part of this. So we took the business process that was very manual and very cumbersome. And I taught myself workflow development on SharePoint. You know, talk about jumping in at the deep end. So we built this rather large, cumbersome workflow, but it saved us hours every week of chasing people, just running around. And, you know, productivity was enhanced. It was great. then I learned actually how to develop in SharePoint properly. You know, I made all those mistakes, you know, taking the SP list item collection and then enumerating them one by one, all those things that just
We've all done that.
Absolutely. And, you know, I built this system. It became a, you know, business critical system. And then about 6 months after we did that, my boss said to me, well, actually, I want you to become a Cisco security expert now. And I was like, I've just spent the last year learning everything I can about SharePoint. And I'd started doing some consultancy within our part of the business and helping other people learn SharePoint. So I decided to, at that point, to leave. And I joined a small partner consultancy as a consultant developer. And then over the next few years, I kind of moved into the architecture space. So I've very much shifted away from dev now into the IT pro space. But I find that's really given me a good background to be able to go in and talk to clients and talk about what their requirements are and learning that essential bit of what can we do out of the box to where do we need to build or buy or do something else. And I think that's an area that a lot of people don't always get right. You know, they jump straight to let's go and develop when there's an awful lot of power in the system out of the box or with light touch development. So it's been an interesting X number of years.
How do you see the transition and the focus from the on-premises to the cloud? And you just kind of it's a kind of a classical journey. I had the same thing. I started as a developer, then I was forced to learn the IT pro stuff because of the MCM trainings and all of the customer engagement and all of that. And then moving into a bit of a, let's say, architect role as part of the journey. But is the IT pro, the skill sets which you learned as an IT pro person, are they all completely wasted, no value whatsoever anymore in the cloud, or is that still a thing? So how do you see the transition from the focus related on skill sets in this journey?
I think there's a definite shift, without a doubt. I wouldn't say that the skill set that I've learned over the years is lost. We still need to understand IP addressing and all that basic stuff. You know,
it's always DNS, still, right? So
or certificates.
Yes. Expired certificates. Yes.
You know, so I still regularly find myself troubleshooting certificate stores or helping clients with their on-prem Active Directory. But the focus has shifted. You know, we've got more of a focus now on how does that on-prem store work with Azure AD Connect? How does it talk to the cloud? How do we take properties from on-prem AD and into the cloud, and how do we use them? There's also a lot of focus on, I used to do things this way. How do I now do that in the cloud? Now, the first question I always get is, how do I replicate that in the cloud? Yep. And this is where we say, no. Do you actually want to replicate it? Or do you want to rebuild it, restructure it, and actually do it with a cloud-centric focus? And I think that's probably the biggest shift, certainly for me as a technician, is how do I go from this on-prem mentality to a cloud-first mentality? And there is a definite seismic shift in how you have to think about things.
But I guess the biggest part of that is change. Because like if I used to do X, and now I want to do X in a cloud, or I used to do X on-prem and now I want to do X in a cloud. Like that's easy, right? Because the only change is the tech. But if I used to do X and now you're telling me, well, shouldn't we be doing Y? Like that's a whole different game, because like the first thing, you need to work with people to change, to adopt the way they think, the way they reason about their work, maybe even their skills. And that's probably the hardest part, like moving from on-prem to the cloud, comparing to reskilling people and changing the way they think about things. Like I can imagine like that is way harder.
It's interesting. We, you know, I do a lot of business change management engagement, and the focus of that is traditionally the end user. But we also do as part of that, and you know, something we used to do an engagement called a business productivity engagement, where we would help clients look at, you know, how do the end users work with the platform? But we'd also look at how do the end users engage with IT? How does the IT engage with the platform? And help companies do a kind of a gap analysis of what's missing from our skill sets. Because, you know, when you take the traditional on-prem skills, you'll have an Exchange administrator who just works with Exchange servers. And there is definite, again, a seismic shift for them are working with Exchange Online, because all of a sudden, you know, we're not responsible for the underlying platform. So we can spend more time focusing on actually making sure we've got things like transport rules configured correctly, you know, making sure that our DLP policies are correct and doing what they should be doing. You know, there's an awful lot of time spent saying, yeah, we're going to roll out DLP, and we do that, and then we forget about it and never go back and never review it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, because we've got the certainly the constant changing platform, you know, we go away from this 3-year delivery cycle to an evergreen model. So the IT skill sets have to go with that. You know, they have to become an evergreen model as well. You can't just roll out a tech.
Yeah, yeah. And also the fact that because you're in a cloud, maybe, you know, there is a bigger awareness around bringing your own. Like, I want to work on Trello, or I want to work with Miro, right? And people will work on that. And like, how does that tie in governance, compliance with your org? And the rules, like things like onboarding, offboarding, data access, permissions management, compliance, governance, and all of that, not to mention GDPR and other things, right? So I think that also becomes a new topic that wasn't maybe as applicable in the past on-prem because, well, you were on-prem and you couldn't connect to everything online, and especially things online couldn't get back to you on-prem, right?
That's half the problem, wasn't it? Yeah. Users would do it, and we had no visibility of it.
Yeah.
So if anything, you know, I would always say that the move to the cloud is giving us more visibility and greater visibility. And if we choose to do it, greater control. You know, I'm working with a number of user groups within my main organization around, do I need Whiteboard or do I need Miro? Now, both are really good tools. You know, I love the Teams Whiteboard. It doesn't work for every scenario. And in that case, then you may need the additional capabilities of something like Miro. But then you've got that additional problem of, if I upload a document into a Miro whiteboard, where is it? Who's got control of it? How do I make sure it gets deleted? And that's where you then need to work with Miro themselves and say, you know, how do I implement the kind of governance rules that I've got in 365 within the Miro platform? And it's great. I mean, they've got some great APIs to work with, and we're just going through that process with them now to make sure that we can replicate the like the 2-year retention policy we have in our teams to the same in a whiteboard, to make sure that when the teams disappears, that whiteboard content has disappeared as well. And I think it's understanding the capabilities. That's really where this big transition comes from, because there's so much more power available to people that they've got to learn it. And it's almost like, oh my God, there's so much there. What do I start with?
How do you see that as a partner before going to the future role and all of that's what's happening? But as I say, you've been in a partner ecosystem for a long time. How do you see this transition of cloud as a partner opportunities? Is it less opportunities? Mm. Is it a change opportunities? Is it more opportunities? Because you might also argue that in the past, and maybe we were a bit younger, all of us in this call, and the consulting was a bit different. We were writing code, we were writing scripts and all of that. Mm. I don't think we would ever do that anymore. It would be more a business consulting. It's more process-driven consulting thinking. Yeah. And that's where the money is.
You I do write it. Code.
Yes. That's because I still ask you to write me some code. So.
Yeah. No, I still do a lot of scripting. But you're absolutely right. You know, the focus has changed. And I said I do a lot of business change management. That's definitely occurred over the last 5 years. You know, as we've gone into certainly more cloud enablement for clients, we've talked a lot more about process change. We've talked about a lot more about business change. How does the business change take, you know, what they used to do day to day? How do they do it going forward? You know, how do we cope with things like the evergreen change model? How do you keep your staff up to date? You know, I used to do quite a bit of work with sort of digital champions in the past, even for just rolling out. You know, if we rolled out a new intranet, you'd work with the digital champions. But that was on, you know, SharePoint 2010, 2013, where you would roll out the platform, you'd roll out the intranet, you'd deliver the product, you'd train everyone. And then as a consultant, you'd generally probably just walk away until they wanted to do an update or something. But with 365, we're delivering. And then there's change, and we're helping them manage change. And so when we talk to the Digital Champions Network now, it's not about this one-off release and then it's out in the wild. It's, hey, there's this change coming to Teams, and a week later, there's another change coming that we just need to adapt and work with. And it's helping people understand the constant need for change. And I think that's definitely a partner opportunity for us, is helping people establish that change management process and understanding how they manage and maintain that impact to the business. Because whilst the you know, the constant pace of change is good because the products are improving, the features are getting better and better. I mean, the biggest one for me at the moment is Teams closed captioning becoming multilingual, where it can translate me talking in English to Mandarin or to Filipino. You know, the client I'm working with are multinational. So this is a huge, huge thing for them.
Yeah.
Being able to have training sessions with captions in the in a client's own language from an accessibility point is huge.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got changes like this coming along that are massive. And then there's little changes all the time. So things like sometimes the toolbars move around. The problem is that users sometimes get scared by that. So if we can pre-warn them, if we can pre-arm them, you take the fear away. And when we take the fear away, it's not a blocker anymore. So people adapt and they accept the changes more readily. And I think that's really half of my job as a certainly a business change consultant there is helping take that fear from them and helping them just accept the fact that things keep changing, generally for the better.
And maybe so on that, right? Like, how did that change? Because like you've been in this job for a while now. How does that change with regards to what you do and the reactions you see? You know, in the past, we would have this deliberate change, like we're rolling out new internet and it's a set point in time. And unless we say so, nothing is going to change, nothing at all. Whereas now, things change and you deal with that. So how did the reactions you get from users with whom you work with these two realities?
Yeah, the reactions is, do you remember that typical bell curve we talk about, laggards and leaders? That definitely comes to the fore in cloud change because of that constant pace. Those at the back end of the curve are the ones that generally suffer the most. And that's where that change management process, again, taking away the fear helps because it helps them feel supported. But you're right. I mean, you know, we had the same problems just doing those one-off rollouts, but there was less it was less constant. You know, so we would address them, we'd deal with them, we'd roll it out and everything was great. But it's that constant pace that's probably more of a problem now for organizations. Especially with the, you know, the changing age groups across the workforce. You know, the younger generations are definitely more readily accepting to change. The older people have, you know, they've been doing it this way for so long that sometimes change becomes a lot harder. I'm seeing this a lot with things like Access databases, Excel spreadsheets. You know, we've always done it this way. And now I can't put that Access database into OneDrive because I can't use it. So we've got to rethink about how we do some of the things that, you know, were set up by someone as a bit of a hobby, and then it became a business critical process. And we're going through some of that pain with clients where you're helping them address, you know, okay, how do I do Access databases in the digital workplace now? How do I take these old ways of working, these huge spreadsheets we used to work with?
But that is an interesting point, because the way I see it is that, like, we call it Access or Excel, but that's how we used to innovate in the past.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there would be a person passionate about their work, wanting to work more efficiently, they would build an Access database as opposed to having a paper of a sheet of paper and a pen and trying to hunt down everybody across the work floor to get their approval, right? So people would automate this with the tools they had then. At some point, it became a thing that they do. Aren't we doing exactly the same with Power Apps and Flows?
Absolutely. Yep. Power Apps is the Access databases of 10 years ago, without a doubt. And I am seeing that across the business where, you know, people are putting together a Power App to solve a business problem. And let's face it, when we talk about users, that's all they're interested in. They don't care about the technology. They care about the business problem and solving it. And when someone says to them, hey, look, we've got this shiny new toy that does everything you want to do. You know, we can use Power Automate to connect to these different systems. Users love it. And then you get, as you say, you get the keen ones who go away and they have a play, and that becomes a business critical app. And then we've got the, you know, the tools now to be able to take that app and put it into a safe environment. You know, so we've got, again, more opportunity that maybe we didn't have with things like Access databases. And I must admit, so we're in the process of doing some data moves from on-prem to the cloud. The amount of Access databases we've discovered during that process is scary. And we have to work with the business to, you know, to understand them, help them move, and overall get them into the cloud. So there are some challenges, but you're right. The problems haven't changed.
Yeah.
Just the way we resolve them.
Baseline.
But it is also an interesting point, right? Because like now that you find, and I think that goes back to the point you mentioned that in the past we used to do the same thing. Now that we are in a cloud, we have finally the tools to be aware of it, to know it, track it, and manage that, and less depend on somebody like Joe leaving the work tomorrow because he had a new job, and everybody's like, we can't work anymore, right? So now you can be ahead of all of that, right? So having more, being more robust, maybe, or resilient, right?
Yeah, now, I agree.
Now, let's switch the gears from a discussion point for a bit of a different angle. You also mentioned, I'm trying to do a segue here. So given the constant chains within the platform,
let's see how well it will work.
And given the constant new features and capabilities and the stuff that is happening, it's actually quite also natural that as a consultant, we start seeing, well, I'm now referring to a consultant, I'm a recovering consultant. As an ex-consultant, we see that constant, let's say, stress also on staying up to date and basically being good enough for the customer engagement, staying up to date on what's happening. And that's actually something which can then, of course, backfire, right? Is that right way of saying that as a segue related?
That's a cracking way of
on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give it a 7.
So I think let's address the stress piece there. You know, the keeping up to date, that's not gone away. If anything, that has got a bit worse. You know, we've got so many different products and there's so many changing products that keeping up to date, that is hard. What it really comes down to is getting the balance right. You know, I work generally with clients. I'm working a 7.5-8 hour day and then doing things around the MVP activities. So maybe preparing sessions. I might, you know, on odd evenings now, work a few hours extra, work up until 9 o'clock. I used to do that an awful lot. Then I had a huge kick up the backside to tell me that what I was doing was wrong. So for those that don't know me, I was at SharePoint Saturday Helsinki. It had been a very busy couple of weeks. I think I'd been to two other countries in the week before. We did the SharePoint Saturday. I delivered my session. We all went out to dinner. And then walking back from the restaurant, I was having a lot of problems breathing. And I jumped on one of those little tier scooters, the hire scooters. Everyone hates them in the UK. I love them because without a doubt.
Now you do.
Without a doubt, it saved my life. I went back to my hotel. I got up the next day. I scooted around Helsinki because I thought, I'm not walking again. That hurt. So I scooted around Helsinki. I flew home. I went to the doctors on Monday morning and they put me on a treadmill and they went, right, you're not going home. You're going to hospital. And 7 days later, I had a quad bypass heart surgery. So full heart surgery and 3 months off work. That was a very big wake up call. You know, I've never, ever had surgery in my life before. I've never had anything major happen. I was diagnosed with diabetes a couple of years before this, but I kind of just adapted to that. But I'd carried on with the work. And I think the biggest thing was I'd stopped listening to my own body. You know, I was doing the hours. I was like, I was really tired, but I was just putting it down to, you know, doing too much. When actually my body was just telling me, slow down. Because if you don't slow down, something's going to happen. And what actually happened was, what I now know, was a heart attack in Helsinki. And the problem is, I think, you know, everyone, when you say someone a heart attack, they picture someone falling to the ground, clutching their chest in agony. There was no pain. I just couldn't breathe. I couldn't walk. And it, you know, it wasn't this terrifying heart attack experience that people talk about. But it wasn't until, you know, I spoke to the doctor and they did this testing and they said, well, yeah, basically you were having, it was either a strong angina attack or a mild heart attack. And the key difference, as I understand it, is the fact that there's no damage to my heart, which means it wasn't a heart attack, it was an angina attack. I think if you go beyond, you get to a point where the actual can cause injury to your heart. So, so I had this surgery, did 3 months of recovery. And then I was really lucky because COVID hit. Everyone goes, lucky. You know, I'd just come back to work as everything started closing down. So I had then another 6 months of rest because we were just working from home. I was able to get back into the consultancy groove, but without the traveling. I also made a lot of changes to my lifestyle. So cut down on the coffee, changed my diet, lost about 3 stone in weight, which was definitely needed. And as we've come back into the new normal, it's got me thinking about the whole work-life balance. So I've definitely got a lot more control now. Tools like Viva is great. I set my focus time every morning. People are pretty good with obeying that as well, and understanding it. You know, if someone's really got an urgent meeting, they'll break through and get a meeting in there. But I set my lunch breaks as well. I make a point of getting out and getting away from the computer every lunchtime, nearly every lunchtime. Literally just get out for a short walk. So my cardiologist told me five times a week, 30 minutes of exercise minimum. So I try and do that for my lunchtimes. And the big benefit of that is it does get me away from the computer.
Yep.
But that's kind of driven, as I said, a few changes. And it has driven me to stepping away from consultancy and deciding to go full time, just as a client rather than a consultant partner.
Yep.
So a big change, definitely.
Yeah. That's definitely a big change. And of course, it's partly because of the age. Sure, the body is starting, cannot cope with the stress and cope with the execution that much. But so even as a younger person, it would be good to find the right balance. Because again, some of us, we're doing this for decades. And the thing shouldn't be about the future things, which are going to be, I'm going to be whatever director within a blah, blah, blah in 20 years. No. I actually, Dave Cohen said this at some point. He's one of the managers in Iceland. And it was really well said that the award and the focus should not be actually in the end goal. It should be in the journey. It should be part of the day-to-day journey and making that as suitable and as balanced as possible, rather than thinking, no, I'm going to push now for 2 months or 6 months or 20 years or 40 years, and then I'm just going to lie in there, which might never happen. That's the problem.
Yeah. I think, you know, I mean, someone said to me, well, what would you go back and tell your younger self? And it's always going to be make better choices. But I don't mean make better choices career-wise or things like that. It's things about, you know, listening to your body, maybe thinking a little bit more about your diet. You know, those fried breakfasts every morning when I was an apprentice was a great idea. You know, I loved it. It was lots of fuel. But over the years, it is going to play on you.
But that point is hard, right? Because like one thing, so like
you don't care when you're younger, do you? Because it's
exactly so. That is exactly my point. And I guess like I even see it in a way like I'm reading a book, and if the topic isn't relevant to me now, I was like I read it. I will just go through it, and it's like one ear in, the other out. And then I will read the same thing in a year where you know my life changed, situation has changed, like. Oh my, this is so profound. And you're like, but it's the same thing I read. Like, why? Well, because your life has changed. You're in a different
stage. Your viewpoint's changed. And
this irrelevant thing. And I think that is really the hard thing when you give somebody else advice, or somebody else who went through what you're going through now is giving you advice from the distance that they have from that, and which you don't because you are in the middle of it. How to deal with that? How do you know, like, be able to step back, like, what am I actually doing now, and listen to that other person, you know, your parents, for example, who went through, you know, the same life stages, and you're like, you're all like, what do you know? Well,
we all have to make our own mistakes. No, I think, you know, it's my own message going forward to people would be, think about things and do it in moderation. You know, I think we can all agree that excess is bad. If you do things to excess, something's going to go wrong. Now, when I was a kid and used to go out and drinking, excess normally ended because you fell over drunk in the street and injured something. And that was probably the worst of it. But it's things do have consequences in the long run. And you just don't want to hear it when you're younger, I guess.
True. Yeah, and actually, the worst part is that when you're younger, your body tends to be able to, you know, recover way earlier, and it can take on more, and you can go out until 4 a.m., be on the floor at 8 a.m., all is fine, and the next day, you know, you're going to be tired, but the day after that, you're, like, fresh.
Yep.
That nowadays, that's not the case. Like 9 p.m. Yeah. and I'm that tired. Age, right?
Welcome to the show of 16. No, it's never 60-year-old.
It's been 84 years.
Exactly. No. But it's an interesting thing about. I think the people in this discussion, which we're born in 70s, I would guess roughly.
71 for me. Yeah.
Yeah. So are you
not even close?
What?
Not even close. Like, not 70s.
What?
No.
What?
No.
90s.
There is a middle ground in there, you know, between 70s and 90s.
Okay. Anyway, there's some sort of a moment in the time when you start realizing that, oh, I'm no longer 25. I just need to start thinking these things.
That's the time when you become 26,
yes. I need to start thinking things in a little bit more perspectives and think about the future in a much more efficient way. But I guess that's part of being young and being in mid 20s or whatever. It's like, yeah, I'm nothing's gonna happen.
It's like you need a life changing event for that because otherwise, like, it's not going to happen because you know, like, it's typically the thing that when things are all right, we take things for granted a lot, like
health,
the family, you know, partner, kids, whatever you have. They are there every week. Like, in a way, you don't care because they are there. You know they're there. You can do things, and you go up, 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 and then something will break, and you're like, oh my god! And only then you start to realize like what you have. You know, the small things, yet very, very important things. But it's very much often the case. Like, you only start to appreciate them when they're gone.
Mm.
Unfortunately, that's quite often true. So, which is a bit of a sad thing. So it's the learning here. Don't worry about it. You're not going to understand the value out of it until.
It is the hard part, I guess. Like, the, on one hand, like, it is hard. It is hard, and I don't think that there is easy answer to that because at the end of the day, I think that the relevance plays role, and if you're not open to it, if that is not the right time for you, you will not listen to whatever advice you will get, right? Paul, you wanted to ask something?
I think hindsight at the end of the day is amazing. You know, we can see back and we can see exactly where we made our mistakes. I think certainly the messaging that I've been trying to give to people is, you know, enjoy yourself. Do things in moderation. You know, it doesn't hurt to do something to excess now and again, just don't do it all the time. And the other thing, and you know, it's the thing that typically men in IT are really, really bad at, is going and seeing someone when you feel something's wrong. So, you know, if you are getting, you know, a twinge or a pain or something like that, don't be afraid to reach out and go and ask for help or go and, you know, but just don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help to anyone at the end of the day. I think, you know, we can be talking about someone with maybe an illness, people with depression. It doesn't hurt to ask. You know, it doesn't make you less of a person, man or woman, brother. It doesn't make a difference if you go out and ask for help. You know, no one's going to think less of you for it.
That was actually really well said, because it's not necessarily always the physical side of the things. It could be the mental depression and getting tired, and stress is taking over the thing. And funny enough, talking always helps, period. Yeah. It's just push you in the right direction.
Yes, but it's also very hard, right? Because, like, I think with the advent of things like Facebook and Instagram, we are so geared towards, you know, seeing the positive and sharing everything that is right. At the end of the day, you're like, hey, like, that person is 5 years younger and they are already like two career stages other, and you kind of get to the point where you start to doubt yourself, like, am I good enough? Am I doing the right thing? And that gives you this additional stress. Well, you don't have the full picture of that other person.
No,
exactly.
You don't know the stress they go through. Do you know the trade-offs they make? Maybe they're alone and they only share that to get that acknowledgement. But probably the grass isn't greener, right? So, but that makes it really hard, I guess.
True. Yeah.
True.
I've always said, certainly to my friends and acquaintances, that if you ever want to talk, I'm certainly always going to be able to listen with no judging. You know, I've gone through a load of things with the heart, diabetes, understanding, and again, what you said there, you know, not everything of that has gone on Facebook. I haven't put on Facebook about the things I've struggled with, because generally we just put on Facebook the funny stuff and the cat videos and the good stuff, you know, like you know, the weekend we just spent in Holland doing Collab Days Netherlands. All that goes on Facebook, but you don't talk about the doubts, the, you know, the quiet part. So, just because someone's always sunny doesn't mean they're not suffering. So, you know, if someone like that reaches out to you and says, then yeah, just be there.
That's a great ending for the.
Yes. Yeah, it's a very profound thought. Yeah, and
But yeah, every single time somebody reaches out to have a discussion, be there, help them have that discussion and listen. Like I said, Paul, it's not necessarily that you need to share. It's listening to others and helping them to share their things as well. But it is an interesting world where we are in this full positive. Everything is shiny, all fun. And then I remember I related on this one. So a few weeks back, I posted a few things in Twitter related on the heart operation for the kid. And I got reactions where people are like, oh my God, no. It's like, no, this is life. This is normal. It's okay. It's just that in the normal day-to-day world in social media, we do not see these kind of things because we always talk about the positives. We always talk about the succeeding and doing better and whatever. In the real world.
Yes and no, right? So I guess it's also a nice way to see how you deal with that and how you choose to deal with it.
Sure.
And how much of a normal thing you choose for it to be.
It's highly subjective, of course.
Where you can see other people, like for them, that's like a major thing because it is a hard, like it's not like, you know, a finger and you have nine more. It's a hard, it's kind of a vital thing, you know, like if something goes wrong, like it's sure you might get another or it might be fixed and nowadays, but it's a kind of important thing, right? And it only proves like how you as a person choose to deal with that versus how other people deal with that because they haven't been exposed to it at that degree, right?
So it's
all different, but it only proves the point that, well, different people think differently about the same things. And there is no one recipe for everybody, maybe then order to like be human, like, you know, be appreciative or be aware of that everybody struggles with something. And you just because it doesn't show doesn't mean that it isn't there, right? Yep. So yeah, be kind, I guess.
Be kind is good.
Yeah. Be excellent to each other.
Yes, definitely.
Cool. That's a great ending for the discussion. Thank you, Paul, for joining us.
My pleasure.
Really, really cool to have a discussion. Good to catch up as well. And good to I still felt bad that I was in the Netherlands last weekend. Watching those things.
I gotta say, it was great to be back in person. I'm really glad that events are coming back.
Yeah,
we got Collab Days in Bletchley Park. I'm just going to say it on the 5th of October. So certainly for any listeners in the UK, free event, please register. Just Google Collab Days or go to collabdays.org and you can get your tickets there.
We'll add it on the notes on the video for sure.
Awesome.
But thank you, Paul. We'll be definitely in touch in the future and we'll move on to the weekly articles right after this with Waldeck.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Paul.
Excellent. Thank you, Paul. And that one, really, really good discussion and good to catch up as well. It's been a while. It's always kind of a, now that we're starting to have those in-person conferences and setups and seminars, you're always like, jealous, I want to be there, but no, but yes, I do, but no, I don't. It's interesting. I'll be anyway next week in Orlando, so I will get my fair share of meeting people. So that should be good as well. So.
Good for you.
Thank you. Thank you, Waldeck. That's so thoughtful. Anyway, let's jump on the weekly articles and start going through them. Quite a few of them this week on the different areas, but we'll run them through and call them out the interesting topics. So first of all, in the Microsoft Teams blog, there was an article related to Microsoft Teams the fact that Microsoft Teams helps manage apps for everyday work functions and fit your modern hybrid needs. And this really around the fact that it's you can use the Microsoft Teams to easily surface the application and functionalities related on your work in the context of your work. So, and also using multiple devices and frontline workers, they can access the application easily through the Teams, because Teams is de facto way of anyway doing even these kind of recordings which we're doing right now and discussions, and then bringing the applications inside of the Teams means that you don't have to flip between the Teams and then the other application and where was the one thing what I was supposed to do. It's all inside of the Teams, which is really, really cool. Now, great video, by the way. Great work on the video on this one. The second article was about SharePoint Roadmap Bitstop, August 2022 edition.
Absolutely. So every month, Mark Cashman shares summary of what's new. What's new in SharePoint, what's new in Viva, what's new in OneDrive. And these articles are a really great way, you know, to follow up and stay on top of everything that's new and that might be applicable to the way you work. So, yep. If you're interested, if you're in this space, and obviously you are, because you're listening to us, you are on this show, check out the article. It's a great way for you to have a TLDR of what happened in product in the last month.
Yeah, absolutely. And a good thing to potentially also call out that even though it's a SharePoint monthly summary, it actually calls out all of the related functionalities. Because as an example, really good example is the class homepage in the Microsoft Teams, which is 100% powered by SharePoint. So this is we're trying to get away from the isolation between the products and rather empower and embrace the power of the platform. So behind of the scenes of every single successful Teams team and channel is actually SharePoint. See?
Nice paraphrase. See? Ooh, yeah. See what you did there. Behind every successful feature, there's SharePoint.
<That's> SharePoint. No, but it's actually, and we don't need to explicitly call out that there's a SharePoint behind of the scenes. But it's interesting. It's that the in many cases, all of the storage pages, files, lists, and all of that stuff, it's always SharePoint. So, but it's okay, and that we don't need to explicitly call it out that it's SharePoint. Even though I feel sad about SharePoint. No, never mind. Focus. Now, we have also had an update on the Microsoft Viva blog on the Viva Learning, when they have a new update on the mobile app, which is making it easier to actually learn on the go. Because again, quite often as we are turning or moving towards this hybrid way of working, we do commute. It's a great opportunity on then actually getting some of the official, let's say, mandatory learnings to get completed, as an example. So good way of accessing information and finding what's the expectation, for example, from a company to watch on some videos and learnings and all of that. So really, really cool updates as well. So pretty mind-blowing how far we've gone from the Nokia Snake, and nowadays we're learning through the phone.
So. That is going way back to the past.
Yes.
Nokia Snake, everybody's like, wait, what?
which the snake again? Where?
If you're listening to this show and you have no idea what we're talking about, let us know.
Yeah, it's okay.
We'd love to hear from you.
Good. And then we have a new interesting digital event coming in September, within a few weeks, actually. Within a week.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's already here. And it's about empowering the workforce in these uncertain times, right? And it's more business oriented event around like how technology that we have already available to us can support your company to thrive, right? So tune in. This event is just an hour, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep. 45 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So it's short, and yep. I guess that there will be a part that is live, and there will be probably some videos available on demand too, like yep. probably the way we yep. go about it, I assume, right?
Absolutely.
So check it out if you are in this space, because it might give you some interesting perspectives into how you can think and talk about technology that we have already available.
Yep, absolutely. And this is, as it's about employee experiences, it's all about Microsoft Viva, and the Viva is again all about how to evolve the platform, just not about the products, but also more industry-specific applications and scenarios on top of the products as well. So really, really cool stuff. Now, we had an awesome blog post from Gary Trinder, which is something which we get so many questions always on, because there's so much information available. There's a constant flow of information on the advanced scenarios and new things. But then how would I get started? So me as a first developer moving in as a new person on Microsoft 365, what are the assets? Where do I get started? How should I approach things? And thank you, Gary, for writing this nice article, which is really around the key steps. So first of all, join on the Microsoft 365 developer program. You'll get a free tenant. Learn the fundamentals of Microsoft Cloud in Microsoft 365. There's a learning path in Microsoft Learn. Certifications available as well. And we do have our super active community, which is growing all the time as well. We have community calls, open source assets, samples, all of that available. So really, really cool stuff as well. So thank you, Gary, on that awesome asset. Now, on the platform community blog, we had also an article from Dipesh Panani.
Exactly. And he shares his perspective on what are some good approaches to work with SPFX, right? So when you build an app using SharePoint framework, what are some logical ways to structure the project, the building blocks, structure the code, basically so that you can accommodate for scale. And over time, it's also easy to maintain it, right? So yep. He shares some experiences from his work. And who knows, maybe you can benefit from them.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. That is a great stuff. Thank you, Dipesh. One thing I need to always call out in here, because I'm a bit senior within experiences, I would never, ever, ever, ever call out something to be a best practice, because always best practices are highly subjective. One person's best practice might not be the best practice for another team. So it's good practices or patterns, which we found useful, but calling it always best is a bit of a bummer. But it's okay.
It's
thank
like you.
You could even
make a point, right, that even something as a good practice, even that depends on the context.
Absolutely.
The context of the team, 100%. The customer, the 100%. Size, the time, your requirements. So I think the context is really key for you to be able to understand when this matters or helps. And also to have this thing like, well, if you do this, then forget all about this because you probably don't need any of that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But thank you, Dipesh, on sharing your practices. And it's always cool to read what are the things and patterns what people found useful.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. Now, then we had from the Power Apps community blog, there was an interesting blog post related on navigation between multiple Power Apps. So if you're in the Power Platform and Power Apps area, this probably might be something you will run into, because again, you might want to split your application to multiple individual applications, and then you want to transition between the apps. And this blog post talks about those scenarios and how would that actually be working. So thank you. Thank you, Ahmed, on that one. So really, really cool stuff. On the Power Platform side, in the official Power Platform blog.
Yes, exactly. So we have an article from Steve talking about the admin side of Power Platform, right? So how do you go about it, right? So what kind of team, what kind of skills you need to have? How do you spend your time being an admin managing Power Platform so that it is agile? It can accommodate all the different needs you have, and also that you are in control of what are the different things that people do on it, what kind of apps they build, resources they consume, and so forth and so on. So discussion about trying to help you get more control on the Power Platform, managing that as opposed to using it to build apps.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Really good stuff. Thank you, Stephen. And then Audrey Corton had a three primary reasons to learn Dataverse. So basically, why does the Dataverse matter and what is the benefits out of using that? So Dataverse is a data storage platform for Power Platform solutions, and it can be really easily being used in that side, in the Power Platform side as well. And why would that matter? Why would you use that rather than other things, and the benefits is using the Dataverse? So really, really cool stuff as well. Thank you, Audrey, on that one. Now, Christian Buckley had an interesting change management blog post in the Recording 365.
Yes, why companies struggle with change. And you probably, no matter who you ask, you will get one or you will get a different answer from everyone. And this is a very interesting topic because things change a lot, right? Like you could even assume that or say that the only constant that is change, right? Things evolve, things change. So why is it so hard? Well, Christian shares his ideas and opinions on that. So if you're interested to hear from him, check out this article.
Excellent. And then Christian was also involved in this article, which says, can I move large Teams files using PowerShell M365 AMA? And basically a panel discussion related on, okay, so I have a large file. How would I now start using that to another location, and what are the options, and what would work and what would not work, and all of that. So, of course, should be a relatively simple thing to do, but again, it depends. Are you a script developer? Are you an API developer?
Nothing's easy at scale. Nothing is easy at scale.
Yeah, that is so true. Good discussion on an article on that one, for sure. Now, we also had a new blog post from Chris O'Brien around SharePoint syntax, and this is really cool. We're starting to get more and more integrations on the SharePoint syntax to make it more powerful.
Yeah, exactly. And Chris has been writing on this for a long time already. And it's like, it's not like he has new article every week, but he tries to write and share his experience on that side because it's so powerful. There are so many things you can accomplish with that. And he's very much, you know, on the cutting edge of it, trying to experiment with it, trying different things. And in this article, he talks about Power Automate, right? If I'm not mistaken, you scroll
Power Automate integration. Yeah, so the key point here is the new actions which are available in Power Automate for syntax. Yes.
Exactly. So basically, how can you can use syntax at scale, right? Because like, it's one thing to have like event, you upload a file and there's something going on. But then at some point, maybe you want to automate things. Maybe you want to automate things some more or at scale, and how you can do that, right? So the cool thing is that now you have more abilities around or even more abilities available to you within Power Automate flows. So check out this article because I bet you will learn at least a thing or maybe even two.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is such a great example of all of these services getting more and more integrated between each other. So really, really cool stuff as well. Now, Julie Turner and Andrew Connell are recording a new podcast, video blog. I don't know what we call this anymore. Whatever podcast. The BMP webcast, I know, called Cloud Dev Clarity. And this is episode 7 around React, Angular, Web Frameworks, Good, Bad, and Ugly, and obviously opinionated discussion related on what works and what doesn't work and why does it actually work between Julie and AC, so Andrew Connell from Voitano. So really, really cool discussion as well. And these are great, great, great discussions points to understand the differences and aspects and what would work and what not doesn't work and why certain people are outside an opinion.
Yeah, and apparently some frameworks are like cars, beer, and something else if you scroll down a little. So definitely, some cars, pasta, and beer. So
cars, like, pasta, and
just
beer.
For that comparison, you might be interested in why. So tune in their show and let them know what you think.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. Appy, Albert Jan Scott, had a blog post around Power Platform Tenant Reporting with CLI for Microsoft 365. So CLI for Microsoft 365 is the open source CLI, community-driven CLI for Microsoft 365, and it has so many commands and so many functionalities available. And one of the new things is about Power Platform Tenant Reporting, so how much stuff is being used, how it's being used, where the flows are, and all of that. And you can easily output that information, for example, in CSV. So really, really cool script as well. Thank you, Appy, on sharing that. AC also had a new article on the Voitano's blog related on how to register SPFX field customizers with SharePoint REST APIs. What is this all about?
Exactly, right? So in SPFX, you have the ability to override the way fields are shown, right? So you can build some code in SPFX, and with that, control how a field is shown. And that can be as simple as, like, you want to add some coloring to very complicated things, like, I don't know, showing a map or whatever you want, right? So, but once you build your code, how do you associate your code with a field? Like, how do you make it actually work? Right. So AC shows how you can do that with the SharePoint REST APIs. And he also has a really nifty app that simplifies it. Right. So you can deploy this app and use this app to set that in place, as opposed to calling the REST APIs by yourself or using feature framework XML or any other ways that are available to you.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Good reference article and a video as well. Thank you, AC, on that. Now, Peter Venstra had a blog post on 5 steps to implement word-based search in Power Apps. So how would you have that search functionality in your Power Apps? And he talks about the different options and how those can be actually done. What those steps, five steps to make the whole thing actually to work. So thank you, Peter, on that one. So making sure that things are actually working. How can you do filtering, for example, in the lists with the filter word and only filter those which are available? And also, how we would be optimizing this in the Power App side. Now, Adam Wojcik, what's the right way of?
Wojcik, yeah, that's yep. the right way. You actually, yep. You're good in Polish.
Thank you. Completely fluent. But Adam has created already created an extension for VS Code for CLI for Microsoft 365, and now he started creating a PMP PowerShell VS Code extension to make it easier to actually build scripts in the VS Code. So basically have a docs integration, sample gallery script and snippets for PMP PowerShell commands. And that's actually really cool, really, really cool scenarios. And you can download this to be available directly in the VS Code. And then that lights up the new functionalities in the tooling. So really, really cool stuff. Yep. Thank you, Adam, on that. Now, I'll actually talk about this one as well because I worked with Alex. So Alex actually had a few cool adaptive card template designs available. And then we worked last week together on making them available in the centralized adaptive card templates gallery in here. So there's a new set of templates and designs available, which he included in here based on the day-to-day work what he's been doing. So really, really cool stuff to be available. So now if we go here, for example, quote of the day, it's a new design template, an adaptive card template for showing those quotes in the cards or Yammer live events. So have a nice design for showing the upcoming Yammer live events. So really idea of this is that we'll have a starting point, an easy design, which we can then start to be using, for example, in Viva Connection and adapt that or adjust that a bit based on your business requirements. But having something always available as a starting point is better than starting from scratch.
Definitely.
Cool stuff. Thank you,
Alex. Because
there's
nothing more, nothing that intimidates more than an empty page. Right?
Exactly.
So it's always easier to date something that works and adjust it to your needs as opposed to, where do I start? Right?
Yep, absolutely. 100%. So really, really cool stuff. Thank you, Alex, on that. Now, on the videos, Paolo had a new video related on Search Web Parts.
Exactly. So another video from Paolo Pialorsi, and this time it's about configuring a search result page with PNP Modern Search Web Parts. So in the past, in the past episode, Paolo would talk about the different building blocks that are available there that are built by the community if you want to work with search. Now, in this video, he shows how you can assemble all these different building blocks to build a search result experience, right? So yep. Your own search results page that you can then again tune to your needs. So a really interesting video, not too long, actually 2:37, is definitely worth everybody's time. When
absolutely.
You have a drink, check it out, because it might inspire you to do some cool things on your intranet.
Absolutely, absolutely. And these web parts are so powerful. So really, really great work on Paul also explaining what's possible with this. And then Laura Rogers had a new Power Hour recording. So she's live streaming this on a weekly basis, unless I'm completely mistaken. And this time the focus was on a SharePoint file viewer web part. What is it? How does it actually work? And what are the adjustments and options what you can do with that? And this web part is a really, really easy way of surfacing then documents, PowerPoint presentations, or any other documents inside of a page, which you can then surface in the SharePoint or in Teams or wherever you are surfacing that information. So really, really cool stuff as well. Thank you, Laura, on that. I guess that's it for now. That's the updated list of articles for this week.
Yes, it is.
good. Any interesting events happening this week for your side?
Events
or, well, actions or plans or
I have a personal thing. We are remodeling the kitchen, so this week it's going in. So it's a really big, crossing my fingers, knocking on the wood, praying to demo gods and whatever else that it fits, that everything fits, and everything that by the end of the week we're done with the mess, right? So it's only 2 weeks, but it feels like 2 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're camping in our own house, you know, like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's probably the bigger thing. Work-wise, we are experimenting with few things. And personally, I am preparing next week that there's going to be Microsoft-wide hack week. So I'm preparing for that together with a few folks. We have an idea and we hope that we will be able to show you something really cool and useful really soon. So cross your fingers for us.
That's a week from now. That's actually a good point. So I'll be at the Orlando in the Power Platform conference during that week. So no can do.
So. You can hack on the road.
I guess not. So we'll see. Yeah. So I guess there's so many other things to worry about during that week as well. So that's it's fine. I really haven't had a proper chance on doing a fix hack learn week within my last years. So it's okay. So.
Plan it. That's on you. Plan it.
Yeah, well, yeah. The planning works. Anyway, it's not gonna no pitching. No.
No complaining.
No complaining. No ranting. No.
Ship it. Yes. On that bombshell.
It's a bad time management, but on that bombshell, thank you everybody for watching, listening, and please remember to do hashtag BNP Weekly so we know all the awesome stuff what you're writing. We would like to promote your stuff in the show as well. Other than that, we'll be back within the BNP Week in a week. Thank you, Paul, one more time.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, everybody. See ya.